Okay, we looks like we have everybody that is going to be here. Oh, wait, we're waiting for Councilor Dirksen. Okay, I'm going to call our meeting to order. We have a quorum. Excused is Council President Lynn Peterson, and I will now ask Ms. Farrakhzadian to provide a safety briefing.
Please note that we are on the third floor of the building. In the event of a fire alarm, please exit out through the door in the northeast corner of this room, go down the steps to the second floor, and exit through the main entrance by the reception desk. We will meet in the courtyard outside that entrance. In the event of a medical or fire emergency, please call 911 and notify the security agent at the front desk. The nearest defibrillator is mounted on the steps leading from the reception desk down to Grand Avenue. A fire extinguisher is located in the corridor to the right of the dais as you leave the chamber.
Thank you very much. And now is our time to accept public testimony for items that are not on the agenda. If there's an item on our agenda that is a specific item you'd like to testify on, we will have an opportunity to do that later. But this is an opportunity for folks to testify for non-agenda items. We have 10, and so if you would like to do so, please make sure you fill out a blue card. We have 10 people prepared to testify at this time. I will call them up in the order that we received the blue cards. We'll start with Courtney Scott, Ann Radley, and Nancy Shaw. Please,
Ann,
please get comfortable.
Ann's running late, so.
Okay, we'll hold that one until we're done, and hopefully she'll be here in time for that. The next person would be Annette Hadaway. Thank you, Annette. Ms. Scott.
Good afternoon. My name is Courtney Scott, and I am president of Free the Oregon Zoo Elephants. We want to welcome new President Lynn Peterson and new Councilor Juan Carlos Gonzalez. We look forward to the opportunity to work with you to create a better future for the Oregon Zoo's elephants. We would love to see the Oregon Zoo follow the lead of many zoos who have shut down their elephant exhibits and retired their elephants to sanctuary. In the meantime, we urge you to agree to achieve 3 goals that would dramatically improve the lives of the elephants. 1, end breeding. 2, ban all use of bull hooks. 3, halt any plans to import more elephants into the zoo. Lynn, in response to your email to supporters assuring us that the elephants at the Oregon Zoo receive excellent care and their welfare is a top priority, we understand that the staff are doing the best they can under the circumstances. But despite that, there have been 4 elephant deaths in the last 4 years, proving that ultimately the elephants are not thriving in captivity. Of the 28 elephants born at the zoo, 21 are now dead. The average age of death was 24, far younger than expected in the wild. And despite the best intentions of the zoo staff, the elephants continue to suffer from extreme stereotypic behavior and a host of zoonotic diseases and conditions. All of this suffering in captivity does nothing to save wild elephants. In fact, elephant populations in Asia and Africa continue to be decimated. No elephant born from the zoo will ever be returned to the wild. And elephant births in zoos are not keeping up with elephant deaths. We urge you to follow the lead of the Barcelona City Council, which has recently mandated that the Barcelona Zoo end all breeding unless the animal can be returned to the wild. This zoo has already ended breeding of elephants. We urge the Oregon Zoo to focus on local conservation efforts, as they have successfully done with condors and butterflies. We encourage you to help the zoo develop an alternative way of viewing elephants, as the North Carolina Zoo did with its virtual tour of Africa. If the Oregon Zoo adopts these new directions, it will earn a much-deserved reputation for creativity, ingenuity, and enhancement of animal welfare. And no real elephant will suffer and die in captivity. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Shaw.
Good afternoon. My name is Nancy Shaw. I live in Vancouver, Washington. I'm going to read this story about Prince. Asian Elephant Prince, his touching story. On any given day at PAWS, Art 2000 Sanctuary, you will see Asian Elephant Prince traversing his enclosure, engaged in selecting tasty morsels of grass or other foods, or maybe swimming and splashing in one of his two pools, a favorite pastime. Or you may see him peacefully napping on the hillside. Prince was born Chang Di at his what now the Oregon Zoo in Portland on May 24, 1987. He just turned 32. His mother, Me Too, was also born at the zoo. She was euthanized at the young age of 34 due to foot disease. Captive conditions contribute to this painful condition. His father, Hugo, was taken from his wild family in Asia when he was just a calf and spent about 10 years in the circus before coming to Portland. Like Prince's mother, Hugo died prematurely at age 43. When Prince was just 16 months old, an age at which elephants are still nursing and totally dependent on their mothers, his life changed forever when he was transferred to a circus. Elephants in circuses spend most of their lives on leg chains, intensively confined, and are cruelly controlled with the bull hook. We don't know much about Prince's life during the next 20 years or so, but we do know what happened when he came to PAWS. When Prince first arrived at our Art 2000 sanctuary in July 2011, he repeatedly dusted himself and then took a long nap on a pile of soft soil in his barn. But there was much work to be done. An important part of PAWS work is rehabilitation of the animals in our care. And Prince was no exception. He was aggressive and afraid. So the first thing we had to do was earn his trust. Our staff worked patiently with Prince, using reward-based training and kind words. With time, he learned no one was going to hit, threaten, or punish him. No bull hooks or chains are ever used at PAWS. Our positive relationship with Prince allowed him to feel relaxed and secure. If you go on YouTube or to their site, they'll direct you to videos where he's playing in this huge pool, moving logs. You can tell that he's just having the best time. There are three sanctuaries in the United States. This PAWS in California, Elephant Refuge North America in Georgia, and the Elephant Sanctuary in Tennessee. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Shaw. Ms. Hathaway.
Council President and members of the Council, I too am responding to a letter sent to one of Free the Oregon Zoo Elephant supporters by President Lynn Peterson. The part of the letter I am responding to is when she wrote, "I'm not sure when you last visited, but I encourage you to personally experience Elephant Lands, the new home of our Asian elephants, and see for yourself why it is considered one of the best habitats in the country. Care staff on hand are there throughout the day to answer your questions." Yes, I've been to the exhibit. I go there frequently to document the elephants' behavior. A significant portion of the new 6-acre habitat is for visitors, leaving less than 4 acres accessible to the elephants. Why aren't you transparent with the public about how many elephants you plan on adding to this exhibit, taking up more space? You state that the elephants have free roam of elephant lands, but are often seen confined in one area. During an Oregon Zoo Symphony concert, Lily and Rose 2 were locked in the North Meadow, staring at the gate, wanting to go back to the barn. Over 30 minutes of standing by the gate, Lily walked away. She laid down and went to sleep, as I've shown in the photo that I brought today, which I'm not able to show you right now, but I'll email it to you after this meeting. I went to a security guard and asked him why they didn't have free roam. He told me they did have free roam. I walked him over to the area and I showed him the elephants were confined. The guard said, "You're right, the elephants are locked in," then did nothing but shrug his shoulders. In 2016, I started learning hands-on elephant foot care with captive elephants in Nepal under Carol Buckley Elephant Aid International. I now have over 50 hours of hands-on experience working on elephants' feet. I know how to use the rasp and the small knife, and I've been told I'm an expert at beveling out wounds on the bottom of an elephant's foot pad. I've just returned from my fourth trip to Nepal, this time spending 6 weeks with the captive elephants there. These elephants are severely malnourished. Their diet consists of scrub rice rolled in cut-up grass that is often molded or dried out without any grain. These elephants are giving rides to tourists with saddles weighing up to 200 pounds plus all the weight of the humans packed in like sardines like a can. These elephants are giving up to 5 rides a day, often walking long distances to and from their enclosures to the riding stations. I am an avid hiker in the Columbia River Gorge. This would be like humans hiking Dog Mountain 5 times a day, every day of their life. These elephants are often withheld water. These elephants are beaten most every day of their lives. I've seen these elephants beaten with axes. These are government elephants. Why am I bringing this up today? These Nepalese elephants live into their 70s. The average age of an Oregon Zoo elephant is 24 years old. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. We have three more to hear on this topic. We have Diane. I may need to be corrected on the pronunciation here. Diane Nartz, Colin Durkin.
Okay,
and Ty Young. So please feel free to state your names as you begin for the record. And feel free to begin.
My name is Diane Nowertz.
Nowertz. Thank you.
This is my first time addressing the council, so I'm not sure about protocol. But my name is Diane Nowertz. I'm from Portland. Used to be a regular zoo goer until I learned about the atrocities that are going on at the Oregon Zoo, particularly those that deal with the Oregon Zoo elephants. I joined the FOES group, learned a lot more, and I just briefly want to echo what my fellow FOES members have told you already about use of bullhook, breeding program, the infant deaths. And this is 2019, and we're all reasonable, responsible human beings, and reasonable human beings do not do this to animals. In the first place, elephants are not meant to be in Portland, Oregon. These elephants are supposed to be in the tropics. They, you know, when it's 60 degrees outside, it's cold for them. And I have also seen pictures of the elephants being trapped outside in the cold, freezing in the cold. I mean, the cold, not just 60 degrees, like when it's cold outside. These elephants are not meant to be here, and I encourage you to free these elephants to sanctuary where they belong, places where it's warm. Tennessee was given as an example, California. These elephants cannot go back to the wild. They've been trapped and trained, and they're human exhibits. And, you know, the only place for these elephants to be at this point is at sanctuary. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, my name's Colin Durfee. I don't think I'll take up the whole 3 minutes either, but I am here to echo the sentiment of the previous speakers, and that I believe that these elephants should be relocated to sanctuaries. I don't believe in captive breeding of any animal. Having spent a lot of time working with nonprofits with animals that need to be rescued, I've just seen all the neurotic behaviors that animals develop well in captivity, and I've documented cruelty at this zoo. I've documented zoocosis behaviors from these elephants. As Diane said, of course, we can't release them back to the wild, but what we can do is stop breeding elephants in captivity, and we can give them the best life possible in terms of relocating them to sanctuaries. Moreover, we are a city that celebrates equality. I think that doesn't stop at animals, and it doesn't stop at elephants. We would never do this to a person. We would never make their lives for human enjoyment. Like they're constantly having children yelling at them, constantly under people's eyes, and I wouldn't want to live a life like that personally. I don't think anyone on this planet should be subjected to a life like that either. So if we truly believe in equality, then we should extend it to other species on this planet as well, and that includes the Oregon Zoo elephants. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
My name is Ty Young. Elephant numbers have dropped by 62% over the last decade, and they could be mostly extinct by the end of next decade. An estimate of 100 African elephants are killed each day by poachers. There are currently only about 400,000 remaining, and as of 2018, there are around 40,000 to 50,000 elephants left in Asia. This is what I want to see happen. I want to find a way that we can get a large sanctuary so we can move them on there where they have large water holes, lots of trees, lots of rocks, and where they can feel safe and protected from ones that want to harm them. Do elephants have feelings? They do have feelings. They feel sadness. They feel grief. They feel happiness. They feel stress. Do you know that when a mate dies, the other one stands by their side and will not leave them? I am an advocate for animals, and I want to have an opportunity to go up to one of these large animals, wonderful animals, and give them a big hug. Let them feel what it's like to be loved and appreciated by humans. I'm asking everyone here today to reach out and help however you can to make life better for them. And with the Oregon Zoo, with the elephants there, I have not really heard any good thing about that. It's very heartbreaking. And I had to quit listening. It was getting too much. So I'm asking that they are released into a sanctuary where they can be with other elephants and enjoy life, what they have left. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. We have three more testifiers. Kathy Davidson.
Yes, Sam. This is Anne.
Okay, I'm getting to that. Art Llewellyn. Come forward, sir. And yes, Miss Anne Radley.
Radley.
Are you? You're Anne Radley.
Yeah.
Yes. Great. Okay. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Anne Radley. The Oregon Zoo animal care staff may be skilled and experienced, but positive reinforcement techniques cannot give a captive elephant dignity. Dame Daphne Sheldrick spoke of captivity in her letter to the Oregon Zoo, and that was in June of 2014 when Packy was still alive. It has been scientifically established that elephants are human in terms of emotion, something that I can wholeheartedly endorse through 50 years of practical experience. They have the same strong sense of family and of death. They have friendships that span a lifetime. Is it right to inflict this extremely severe punishment on an innocent animal that duplicates us humans in terms of emotion, longevity, and age progression, and moreover has a memory that far surpasses our own? Back to the subject of positive reinforcement techniques, I do not see how the bullhook can be a positive reinforcement tool. It is a large steel stick with a sharp hook at the end. It is designed specifically to inflict pain and fear. Bull hooks are viewed as effective in the zoo industry because they inflict pain. The bull hook can elicit a quick response in forcing an elephant to do tricks to avoid pain. It does not matter if the zoo chooses to use the word guide. The result is the same. This is just, it's kind of a small picture, but an example of, I believe it was Rose 2 doing tricks to avoid pain for entertainment, I guess. One thing I feel would be a step in the right direction would be for the Oregon Zoo to follow the example set by California in 2016 and discontinue the use of bullhooks. We ask you to consider issuing a public statement that you will discontinue the use of negative reinforcement techniques, which includes bullhooks, guides, sticks, or any kind of long, sharp object. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Davidson.
Hello, I'm Kathy Davidson, and I'm a volunteer with FOES as well and have been demonstrating out at the zoo. And recently I sought to borrow a drill from a neighbor, and he said, yes, of course, I would normally give this to you, but I had to work out at the ranch this weekend, and we were castrating the bulls. So as I sought to assimilate the two things, he went on to describe how they used the drill to do so. And wasn't it nifty that it produced so much less blood? And, you know, I said, well, is there any pain involved? And he said, of course, what do you think? Well, is any anesthetic involved? Well, no, we just pat him on the head. And he turned around and stalked away, feeling judged. So as I tried to reconcile this new man with the one I had lived next to for years and known to be such an avid animal lover at home, I came to realize that we all have very different definitions of things in life, and cruelty apparently is one of them. So it led me to understand that maybe there is an impediment here also when we come to speak to you, those who have the power to end what we perceive as cruelty. So I devised an exercise to see if maybe we can establish a baseline understanding and communicate a little better. So if you'll think back to your first memory in this life, the very first thing you can think of knowing, and then take yourself to your first day at school, up through the years to graduation, your first job, marriage, children, maybe grandchildren, but all of this breadth of experience that we call life, and it encompasses decades of time. So if you take that full scope of your experience now and just imagine yourself having spent all of that time in this chamber with nothing but the view that you have now and no choice of anything other, and you're not left to your own devices but are poked and prodded, tested, bred, if against your will, then you're restrained and impregnated against your will. I mean, when you substitute a human being for what the animals undergo, it sounds pretty horrific. I don't know anybody who could contemplate that alternate existence that I just described to the one that you've actually led and not find that completely untenable. So when we speak on behalf of animals, I believe that that is how we perceive it. So I would ask if you can understand now where we come from, if you would please help us in our endeavor by telling us what it will take to actually end the suffering and close the zoo.
Thank you. Mr. Llewellyn.
Afternoon, Council. I want to address two issues that are unrelated to the last testimonies on elephant conditions at the zoo. The two issues are our bus system and transit-oriented development. And I'm going to start with buses, but I want you to look at the development of the post office block. That's a new drawing there. It was taken from the presentation that was given at EcoTrust this week. Although it wasn't a handout, I had to photograph it and then estimate building height and dimensions, footprints, in the rendering there. I think it's pretty accurate, though. Now, to start, I want you to just, while you have a look at that new drawing. So I don't want to make a formal complaint about the color dark blue on the new buses as a terrible mistake. An accident causing darkness in all settings for drivers and pedestrians that you can, whether it causes accidents or not, you can then say it is increasing the chances for accidents to happen. It came to me some time ago that while waiting for a bus, I can see the bus coming, the white across the header board of the windshield, within 5-6 blocks. And then now that it's blue, I can't see it until it's within 3 blocks. And even then, I'm not sure. But I always step into the bike lane or even the lane if I have to see when the bus is coming. So I'm taking my, it's a compulsive thing with me. I just want to know what's coming. A lot of people do it. The color blue is wrong. All kinds of ways in the back, you see a big dark object of vehicles driving behind him, and that's just saying the odds got to go up. I would just go back to white, the reflective color, with our orange, red, and brown horizontal stripe of some kind. It's a formal complaint against the color blue. If accidents happen, then someone's asked to go to court to testify that you were warned of this problem, and you said nothing. Anyway. For the buses as they go, they're talking about converting a standard bus to an all-electric drive, and they do not convert very well, neither to hybrid nor to standard drive. They really need to can the bus, 40-foot bus fleet. And go from the ground up, new models that will quadruple the mileage at least and further emissions reducer. Don't just convert them and call it good. One place that these new buses can run on is bus rapid transit corridors. I'm not going to be able to finish my time here. Which Barber is. Barber is perfect for bus rapid transit corridor, and the only reason that you're doing it is to serve these developers that are coming into town. Yeah, so Tiger Triangle is going to be a great Pearl District. Well, I don't think so. That's what the King James Version of the Bible calls a bearing false witness, a kind of bait and switch. Pretend you're going to have one thing and then change it all and never let the public know the information they need to really judge whether a project is worth doing or not. So I say the MAX project is coming to a court case, and I don't want it to go that far. I've already given it, ways to think about how to improve our bus system with a bus rapid transit on Barber instead. I don't want to wait much longer. I'm thinking about it. I'm just courtroom headed to stop the MAX Barber project and come up with something better.
Sorry
if I'm a little heated.
Thank you, Mr. Llewellyn. Thank you for all the testimony today.
We now move to today's consent agenda, which consists of two items: consideration of the council meeting minutes for June 13, 2019, and resolution 19-5000 for the purpose of readopting Metro Code Chapter 7.03, investment policy for fiscal year 2019-20. Is there a motion for approval?
Moved.
Second.
Thank you. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. The consent agenda passes. And now on to resolution number 194973 for the purpose of amending the FY18-19 budget and appropriations. Lisa Hutton will make a presentation.
Good afternoon. So good afternoon, Deputy Council President Chase and councilors. My name is Lisa Houghton. I am Metro's Financial Planning Manager. The amendments presented for your consideration today are the final of the three consolidated budget amendments for fiscal year 18-19. Staff report made available to you earlier has specific details, but I will outline some of the budgetary implications today. And then I will answer any questions you may have. Finance and Regulatory Services is requesting $150,000 from the general fund contingency The additional appropriations will pay for our agency-wide review of payroll and timekeeping processes to ensure they align with the Fair Labor Standards Act. Consultants are reviewing and reconfiguring our payroll software and are also providing guidance on how the law requires us to calculate overtime. Council is requesting $190,000 from the general fund contingency to pay for additional personal service costs associated with staffing changes during the current fiscal year. And the Oregon Zoo is requesting $500,000 from their operating funds contingency. The additional appropriations will pay for two additional zoo concerts that were not envisioned when they did the original budget. And the additional concerts will, of course, also generate additional revenue. That concludes my planned remarks. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Is there a motion for approval?
I move resolution 194973 to amend fiscal year 18-19 budget and appropriation schedule.
Seconded.
Discussion? Please call the roll.
Councillor Stacey?
Aye.
Councillor Craddock?
Aye.
Councillor Lewis?
Aye.
Councillor Dirksen?
Yes.
Councillor Gonzalez?
Aye.
Deputy Council President Chase?
Aye. Thank you. And now on to resolution number 19-4984 for the purpose of adopting the capital improvement plan for fiscal years 2019 through 2020 through 2019-20 through the fiscal year 2023-24 and readopting Metro's financial policies. And again, we have Ms. Houghton to provide the presentation.
Thank you. So resolution 194984 is a companion resolution to the next resolution on Council's agenda today, which will adopt the fiscal year 19-20 budget. If approved, this companion resolution will result in the following. Council approval of the five-year capital improvement plan. The plan includes over 180 projects with total fiscal year 19-20 appropriations of $117.2 million. Total estimated project costs for the 5 years of $255.2 million. The second thing that will be accomplished is Council's readoption of the agency's financial policies. There are two policy sections that contain revisions as follows. The first deals with updates due to changes in the SEC requirements for continuing disclosure rules, which we are required to follow for our bond issuances. The SEC revised its post-issuance compliance requirements earlier this year for certain types of legal obligations. Language to address the new requirements and to adopt terminology changes have been incorporated into the financial policies. In addition, Resolution 164689, which was originally adopted in fiscal year 15-16, has now been embedded into the financial policies again to incorporate terminology changes. The second area of changes to the financial policies deal with our capital asset management plan. Prior policies contained conflicting thresholds for inclusion of projects in our five-year capital improvement plan. The $50,000 threshold was revised to align with the correct $100,000 threshold throughout the remaining of the policy. And the steering committee's membership and purposes were also revised. And again, that ends my presentation.
Thank you. Any questions for staff at this time on this resolution? Hearing no questions, is there a motion for approval?
Move approval.
Second.
Thank you. Please call the roll.
Can we have a comment?
Oh, sorry. Yes. Discussion. Yes. I'm sorry about that. Skip a step there.
I would just like to say that going over reviewing the budget for capital improvements for the next 5 years, between taking care of what we've got and meeting the requirements of the promises that we've made to Metro residents around affordable housing and parks and nature, other things, as well as update as mundane things as making sure that our software systems are updated and functioning properly. We have a lot to do over the next 5 years, and reviewing everything that needs to be done and how it's funded and the things that absolutely must be accomplished. I'm just pleased that we actually have the financial wherewithal to be able to do all the things that are identified there.
Thank you. Any other comments? Okay, now we can entertain a motion for approval.
Councilor Dirksen made that.
Oh, we've done that. Okay, yes. Thank you. Sorry. Now it's roll call, please. Thank you.
Councilor Lewis.
Aye.
Councilor Dirksen.
Yes.
Councilor Gonzalez.
Aye.
Councilor Stacey.
Aye.
Councilor Craddock.
Aye.
Deputy Council President Chase.
Aye. And now we are on to the second reading for Resolution Number 19-4977A. For the purpose of adopting the annual budget for fiscal year 1920, making appropriations and levying ad valorem taxes, Council considered and voted on amendments and notes to the FY 1920 budget on June 13th and held public hearings on the budget at earlier Council meetings. Council action today on this resolution will be the final step in adopting the FY 1920 budget. And again, as should be no surprise, we have Ms. Houghton to provide a presentation.
Thank you. And yes, as you stated, this is the final step in the formal adoption of the fiscal year 1920 budget. The budget was initially presented to Council on April 11th and approved by submission to the Multnomah County Tax Supervision and Conservation Commission, also known as the TSCC, on June 6th. It was reviewed and certified by the TSCC. Last Thursday, you did vote and approved several amendments and notes to the adopted budget. They have all been incorporated into the final document. And as of the amendments, the total fiscal year 1920 budget is approximately $1,349,000,000 and includes 958.71 FTE.
Thank you. And before we have a public hearing, are there any questions at this time for staff? Okay, I will now open a public hearing. If there is, we have no cards at this time. If there's anybody that would like to testify on this, please come forward. Seeing no one coming forward, I will close the hearing and call for a motion to approve resolution number 19-4977A.
I so move.
I'll second.
Thank you. Moved by Councillor Stacey and seconded by Councillor Craddock. Any discussion?
I would just like to make a comment. For any residents of the metro area that review this budget and compare it to last year's budget, and as a result, your eyes bug out of your head because it's effectively double what last year's budget was. Primarily, that's because of the passage of the affordable housing bond. Thank you very much for the large percentage of residents who voted yes for that to allow us to provide housing for those that are most challenged in keeping in housing. And that is the main purpose. Many times when we do a bond, we will sell the bonds and collect the money only to the level that we need it this year or over the next few years. But we made the choice this time to sell all the bonds for the whole $653 million all at once so that the money would be available. Typically, when we make a bond, we decide when and how it's spent. But in this case, the money is going to be distributed to our housing authority partners around the region so that the money needs to be available when they're ready to spend it. And we also discovered that by doing the bond all at once and then putting the money into investments, we actually gain a benefit from having that in investment, and it actually increases the amount of money that will be available in the end. But bottom line, the reason this budget is so much larger than last year's is primarily because of that one reason.
Excellent. Thank you. Any other comments?
I'll make a comment. Thank you to all of the staff, departments, and stakeholders that helped us craft this budget, as I believe it is one of the most exciting opportunities for us to materialize our strategic plan to advance racial equity. And as we incorporate and implement our guiding values and practices into everything that we do at Metro. So thank you so much, and I look forward to implementing the budget.
Councilor Lewis.
Sure. I would like to thank not only staff but also fellow councilors, particularly for the work done to outreach to us on values that were incorporated in the budget since the very beginning of the budget process, and additionally for the good work and ideas brought forward in the amendments and notes over the past couple of weeks. I think we're really going to be able to move the dial on some of our top priorities of housing, equity, and workforce through the work that is going to be done through those programs. So thank you, Council.
Well, I would add my appreciation also, and for those maybe watching at home who think, gosh, this is a pretty big budget to be passing so quickly, it has not been so. We have had a lot of discussion and deliberation and communication for many, many months getting to this point. And I've really appreciated as well the way that council has been really heavily engaged in this discussion and moving forward this really impressive budget. I also appreciate the support for my budget note amendments that are really focused on advancing and bringing our equity work to the next level, as well as all of the other amendments and notes that were added as part of the refining process to get us where we need to be. So with that, one more thank you, and we are prepared to call the roll.
Councillor Craddock.
Aye.
Councillor Lewis.
Aye.
Councillor Dirksen.
Yes.
Councillor Gonzalez.
Aye.
Councillor Stacey.
Aye.
Deputy Council President Chase.
Aye. The budget passes. And we now move on to Chief Operating Officer Communications.
Great, thank you. The only thing I actually have today is just a follow-up on the budget action, and I just wanted to take just a minute to thank the Finance and Regulatory Services staff, along with all the other departments, but really FRS staff over the last few months. This is a tremendous achievement. I can tell you this is my first budget adoption at Metro. It looks a little different here than it did at the City of Portland, and in a very good way. So I was just commenting to Nathan, this was a remarkably, the fact that there was no testimony and no protests and everything. And actually, I think it speaks to what you mentioned, Deputy Council President, about sort of the process we've gone through, and it was really collaborative. And I think that looking back, you know, these first budgets, when you also go through a council change, can also be very challenging. But you know, incorporating very early the values of the incoming, you know, elected officials as well as the existing council members, I think really helped this go smoothly. And I think that also the amendment process, you know, last week have added some really, good issues for staff to look into, whether it was amendments or budget notes, and report back to you and sort of set the stage for future budgets as well. So I really appreciate the work of the staff and council as we go through this. And finally, Councillor Dirksen, just to follow up on your assets, because it is a lot of money we're spending and it is a lot to do, I do want to stress it, it's still not enough. And when we think about sort of overall asset management, that is one of the challenges, but also one of the things we're really looking at is how can we make sure that we're protecting the assets that we're in charge of, because I think that's a really key issue. So anyway, thanks to everyone involved.
Thank you.
That's all I have.
Councillor Communications. Councillor Craddock.
Thank you. If you're looking at a group of us that are looking sleepy by now, we had our JPAC meeting this morning, which starts at 7:30. And so I just want to report on some of the discussion that occurred there. The Washington County made a presentation regarding the Tualatin Valley Highway Corridor Plan. This is a plan that Metro has helped support, and Washington County has had multiple reviews of that corridor and bringing all those different plans together over time, and are preparing relooking at the corridor on how we'll make it safer, make it a corridor that will accommodate transit better, of course, make it a corridor that allows people to get through there efficiently and effectively and safely. This is one of the corridors that's being considered for the T-2020 major that Council's considering. This one was brought to JPAC not because it's being considered for the T-2020, but a corridor that has been in the process of being reviewed by Washington County. And so it was interesting to listen to some of the thoughts and plans and observations that they have made and found as they move through the review of the corridor. It's an interesting area of the region because it goes through three cities, I think it is, and unincorporated Washington County. There's been multiple deaths on that highway, people trying to cross the highway safely, and not safely, I should say, and oftentimes the deaths occur right near a transit stop. So I look forward to see what they find, and hopefully that they're going to find a way to slow traffic down and also accommodate more transit better in the future. So also there was a presentation on the Safe Routes to School program Noel Mickleberry has recently started working at Metro. She's has a background in Safe Routes to School, and this council gave direction to the to and JPAC, including JPAC, to look at Safe Routes to School program comprehensively as a region and not a one-off, one school district at a time. And so it's at the beginning of that process, and she'll be coming back to us later on as she moves through that work. And then Dan Kemp made a presentation regarding the regional travel options grants and just the value of what the RTO program does for the region. This is, of course, these are some of the programming that we do to help make it safer to get around, help allow us to support transit, and to make it efficient, help make it more efficient to get around the region, even by automobile. So, I don't know if you want to add to that, Councillor Stacey and Councillor Dirksen.
Only note that I feel the same yawn that Councillor Dirksen just indulged in. being here yesterday evening to watch the deliberations of our Transportation 2020 task force, and then showing up bright and early to talk about transportation again this morning. But I'll concur that the description of the Tualatin Valley Highway plan was very exciting. I was recalling my colleague Councillor Gonzalez's description of watching people race through that busy and fast-moving traffic to try to catch a bus, and seeing some of the conceptual improvements for transit stops and for center running lanes to get through particularly difficult intersections and over to a safe stopping place gives me real hope about how our partners can really rise to the occasion and do great planning for all modes in a corridor.
Councilor Dirksen, did you want to add anything to this?
No, I think you're good description.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilor Gonzalez.
Fellow colleagues, I survived a near encounter with a grizzly bear on Friday, but I'm here, happy to report.
I'm glad of that.
A reminder that I'll be in Denver this weekend supporting the City of Cornelius on their All-American City finalist presentation. Hopefully we bring back an award to the region. That's enough for me on personal matters. I also wanted to take a moment to recognize Mr. Nathan Sykes on his last council meeting as acting Metro Attorney and expressly thank him for his service.
Amen.
His leadership at Metro with DEI and for your efforts over these last few months. And thank you, sir.
Any other updates? I guess I wasn't quite processing this will be your last as the acting interim, as somebody who knows the inside, the ins and outs of kind of where everything happens at Metro and how things work, you've been just stepped up and have been an incredible asset for us. And I know there's much yet left to do, but this is one task that you've taken on incredibly well and performed very well. So I want to extend my appreciation. And hearing no further discussion, the council meeting is hereby adjourned. The next regular council meeting is scheduled for Thursday, July 9th at 2 p.m. at the Metro Regional Center Council Chambers.